It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded September 7th, 2023. And in the pod this time, Bay Area broadcast legend Mark Ibanez.
Hey, how are you, Barry?
Not bad. You, thanks for doing the podcast.
My pleasure. And, you know, you helped me get out of bed early and get rolling here. Get the day on the move.
That's happy. Right. That's my job. I did well. So let's start today, 7th of September, with a breaking news story that's a big deal for Bay Area fans. Nick Bosa signed.
Yeah, I think 49er fans were getting a little bit scared, if I may, about the possibility of, and I said this before on your radio show, is, you know, the Warriors season was kind of undermined last year. Bad start, bad vibes when Draymond punched Jordan Poole, and they had some issues, and it just kind of taints the beginning of the season, gets everybody who should be feeling optimistic and the season starting. Well, with the 49ers, I feared the same kind of thing happening with the vibe. And there's so much psychology and emotion that goes into sports, particularly on the professional level. And then, you know, they trade Trey Lance. There was some commotion in the locker room, like, was that the right thing to do? And it caused all kind of commotion and emotion to come out. And then I kind of saw the same thing happening. Now you got Trey Lance being traded, and now their number one defensive player, Nick Bosa, not available to start the season. So they cut off controversy by making him the highest paid defensive player in history.
Which was what he was holding out for.
Yeah, right? Which, you know, always amazes me that it's, I mean, come on, how much of that is ego? Like, I want to be, well, how long is he going to be? Barry, I remember Ricky Henderson held out one time because he wanted to be the first and only $3 million a year ball player. It literally, I think, lasted 4 days that he was the highest paid. I mean, the money they're making these days, it doesn't last.
And what you said about, like, poisoning the clubhouse atmosphere, imagine you've got a team like the 49ers that has the potential to win the Super Bowl, but one of your key players, it's making it more about him than the team.
Yeah.
And if they had not resolved that, it really could have been a mess.
And, you know, it's interesting because all I can tell you through experience, all professional athletes root for their fellow guy to make as much money as they can, because in the end, theoretically, it bodes well for them to make a lot of money. So there's not resentment up to a point. And at a certain point, it kind of breaks where it's like, hey, man, do you care more about, you know, your ego trip of being the highest paid defensive player, or we are on a Super Bowl mission here? And one of the most interesting things that happened to me early in my career was the 49ers in their heyday, when they had Joe Montana and all those guys that you hear of, Ronnie Lott, et cetera, one of their great defensive backs, Dwight Hicks, felt he was very much underpaid. And he was a great player, make no mistake. But he chose to, when the Ram game was coming up, the Rams were their big rival, and he announced like 4 or 5 days before the Rams game, crucial game in the NFC West, if they don't give me a pay raise, if they don't change my contract, I'm sitting out the Ram game, which was like, what? You're under contract, dude. And so I remember this columnist, his name was Glenn Dickey, very big name in the those days, San Francisco Chronicle. And he said, Dwight Hicks just alienated himself from the entire team. They're going to hate him for doing this. Players are going to look at him askance and blah, blah, blah. I went down there to cover it. The players were all for him sitting out and getting the money because they realize in the end, your career span is so brief. Get it while you can because you're just part of the machine and the owners will take advantage of you and use you.
Yeah.
And this, I remember this very astute and renowned columnist being so wrong in the way he judged these players. It was like I was real young at the time, kind of a wake up call, like, oh, okay, these guys stick together no matter what, man.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, it could be me next time, is what they're thinking.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, football, we may have talked about this at some point, but football more than any other sport You got to get your money while you can, because you're one play away from being done for the rest of your life.
No question about it. Right? And up until recently, like I noticed that something like Nick Bosa's $170 million contract, I think upwards of like $124 million of that is guaranteed. Well, 10 years ago, that was unheard of. There was no such thing as guaranteed money in football. And that's really changing now. The stakes are so high and the money is so high. And these players have started demanding, like the other sports. And people don't realize, if Shohei Ohtani signs a $600 million contract next year and he blows out his arm, which he kind of already has, but he gets that money no matter what.
Yeah.
The team is on the hook for it. But in football, it was different. Now that's starting to change, which, you would think, I understand it from the owner's perspective that, these guys could get hurt and I'm stuck with this. But then the players, they are literally putting their life on the line. That's a very dangerous sport.
Yeah, and then thinking too, there's the guy who career's over in 3 years or 4 years because of some big injury. Then there's the guy who plays the full lifetime of the sport and ends up hobbling around,
right?
Can't be comfortable anywhere, maybe the CTE, who knows what else, right? So unlike other sports, earn what you can while you can.
Yeah.
But I wanted to use that to segue over. I read something briefly about this new helmet design, and maybe there's some protection for players, because the CTE thing is
it really
bothers me as a fan.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch people's lives end or have them, to look at that guy and say, well, he's never going to be the same after that hit. That's not fun.
Absolutely. And there's a certain guilt that if you have any empathy for your fellow man, you're watching this blood sport. It's been nicknamed that, and you're, getting a kick out of these big hits, just seeing guys get blasted, and they used to have a segment on ESPN that had a name for like the best hits of the week. I can't remember the name of it, but it was like kind of emphasizing how cool was that hit,
right?
And then you start seeing, and for me, my wake up call was when Joe Montana and Ronnie Lott got inducted into the Hall of Fame at Channel 2. They sent us back to Canton, Ohio. And we saw the ceremony, and one of the things that I was not aware of is that they invite all the fellow and former Hall of Fame inductees onto the stage. And it was like eye-popping for me to see these older gentlemen that you hadn't seen in years publicly, but in walkers, canes, and who knows what the mental disabilities were, but it was shocking for me to see even the guys who weren't using cane, like their limp, their knees, the way they were stooped over. It's a sport where you definitely, I believe, most cases sacrifice your elder years for complete mobility and all those things that we strive for, and who knows about the mental incapacities. I'm not going to say his name out of respect for him, but I had a former player who I did a post game show with, and he had the early stages of some CTE, and he said to me, if I start rambling and it's not making a lot of sense, just bump me on the knee under the desk on the set, and I'll know that I'm rambling. He wasn't even aware, and he would go off on these tangents, like, you're kind of like, where's he going with this? And it's not a laughing matter. I'm with you, man. Anything they can do to protect these guys. And another thing that I think the NFL is lax on and is improving is taking care of these players who built the foundation for all these guys to, like Bosa, to make these incredible salaries. It's like they need to be taken care of in a big way. And the NFL has been embarrassingly lacking in that.
Yeah, it's very much a people being used, and you squeeze out of them all you can, and then in the old days, just toss them aside, and it'd be another guy ready to step in.
Yeah, and it's a little better now, but still really deficient system they've got going on right now.
Let's come back to where we were a moment ago and talking about the 49ers going to the Super Bowl this year. You have made the statement, I believe, already that you think they will. Is are you still sticking with that? And is this year they'll
Yeah, when did I say that?
A couple weeks ago.
No, you know, and it's kind of an interesting psychology, too. I was thinking about that. You know, it has been labeled Super Bowl or bust for the 49ers. They have this incredible roster. There's no obvious deficiencies with this team where you go, oh, my, you know, maybe you could say Brock Purdy's a question mark because we haven't seen him over the course of an entire season. But basically, the 49ers are expected to seriously challenge. So I wanted to say, like, from a fan's point of view, what do we always hear about everything in life? It's the journey. You know, enjoy. Well, will 49er fans be able to enjoy the 17 games of the regular season knowing that, okay, big deal. They won, you know, week three, 38-7. Okay, who cares? What's next? You know, it's like I was starting to wonder, like, it's going to be kind of a weird season because it's not good enough. And, you know, I covered the 49ers very closely, traveled with them, everything in the dynasty years. And I remember literally they would win a game, but say they would play a much lesser team and they'd win, say, 24-21. There'd be like outrage on sports time. Exactly. It'd be like, they only won by 3 points, mm-hmm. You know, where you lose sight of, you know, in the NFL, it's very hard to win a game. You know, take your victory, man. And it doesn't matter if it's by, in the end, if you're in the Super Bowl, nobody's going, yeah, but remember week two where they only beat the Saints 17-13? You know, it's the fan mentality now that I've kind of stepped away from it. You know, when you're immersed in it, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, that's the way it goes. But then when you can be a little more casual and you're not in it day in, day out, you're like, man, this sports talk radio is really wacky.
Isn't
these
it?
Fans are freaking crazy. I, on the way here, Barry, I was listening to sports talk radio and the host actually said, you know, if the 49ers were playing the Chiefs right now in the Super Bowl, which I think is going to happen, the 49ers would be underdogs to the Chiefs. I'm like, what are you talking about? They haven't even played their first game, and you're wondering who's going to be favored? Yeah, it's insane now.
Can you
really
imagine trying to come up with enough to talk about in a sports talk show every single day for 3 or 4 hours? That would be hard.
I was wondering how I was going to make it to your podcast.
Right? 20 or 30 minutes.
I'm leaning on you, Barry.
Do you remember, was it Randy Cross who got in trouble when he was playing for saying something about the Chardonnay sipping fans?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah, the 49ers in their those early dynasty years.
The reason that came to mind, what you just said about the sort of expectation, I've been to only a few 49er games. One of the times it was the season tickets that the old owner of the radio station here had for a long time.
Does the new owner take care of us with tickets?
No season tickets that I know of. We'll need to work
it on that guy.
So, and it might have even been an exhibition game. I don't know, but the free tickets, you don't get a chance to go. 50-yard line, great seats, right? And surrounded by people like him who had those season seats for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the attitude and the tone in the stands was so unenjoyable for me.
Ah.
Because, you know, here's the Niners. This is the late 80s, maybe early 90s, one of the best teams ever.
Right.
At that point.
Full decade-long dynasty of Super Bowl contention every year.
And such clean play and such a great system that they used and all that. So if they didn't convert a third down, you'd hear all this, oh, come on. What is wrong with these guys?
Yeah.
And this attitude of you're entitled to win and, you know, and score 70 points a game. I'd never been in a crowd that was like that before.
Yeah, it was a really weird time to be a 49er fan in particular. I mean, they're the team I grew up with, and they always stunk, you know, or they were, you know, if they made the playoffs, that was like great, mm-hmm. You know, in the way back, I'll go, you know, John Brody years, you know?
Yep.
And we just were so happy they made the playoffs, let alone and then this whole thing changed when they won a Super Bowl, and it was like this expectation level. And I know exactly what you mean because I, as a media member, would go to the press box every Sunday and watch the game there. Oh my God, the newspaper writers in particular, and yes, I will single them out. You talk about cynics, and they are smarter than Bill Walsh, the coach, and why is he doing this? Where this is how bad it got for me, Barry. I stopped going to the press box and would try and like just find a spot in the stands wherever there was an empty seat or a place I could stand, because you're almost like poisoned to this expectation level.
That's it.
And they are the ones, the media, and I will include myself in that, who anointed Bill Walsh a genius. So when everything was going well, oh yes, the genius did this. But if something went wrong, it was like, why are we calling this guy a genius? I'm smarter than this.
Didn't convert that third down.
Yeah. It's the whole thing about being a sports fan and covering it. It's just a really weird deal if you step away and look at it. I totally understand your feeling in the stands.
I did not like it. I wanted, where are the real fans? People whose hearts are in this.
And not only that, they have an understanding of the game and what's going on and how difficult it is. And my basic philosophy with being a sportscaster, and one of the things that I think helped me last as long as I did, was that I always felt like I never played Major League Baseball, football, or basketball, you know, any sport professionally. So I didn't feel like I had the right to really nastily criticize them. To an extent and fairly, but I would never go past a certain level because I could see up close how difficult it is, to be a professional.
I think what made you so popular as a sportscaster on Channel 2 all those years was that fans identified with you, because you when I remember watching you, that there's a sensation that you love the games you're covering, that you love the athletes, what they go through, what they work toward, and that in a sense you're like the fans themselves, giving them something to bite into there.
Yeah, kind of like a conduit into the inner world, and I never backed off of that. Like, there were so many kind of self-righteous sports casters like, I don't root for any team. Right. I don't care who wins. And I kind of went the other way, where, look, I got into this because I was a fan. I'm making no bones. I don't have any pretense that I'm above, I have to be objective. No, I grew up loving the Giants, the 49ers, the Warriors. And this is kind of weird in the Bay Area that I saw another thing change. This is like a whole different show. But when I was a kid, the Raiders were here, the A's were here. And there wasn't this, like, you have to hate the Raiders and love the Niners or vice versa. They were from the Bay. We root, like, I could honestly tell people, they'd go, who do you like better, the Raiders or the 49ers? And I go, you know what, man? I root for them equally. And it was really true, And the A's weren't here when I first became a baseball fan. So I used to say, honestly, I love the Giants. I really like the A's. I pull for them.
Fair enough.
But it's one of those things, like, I'm not going to be pretentious and go, no, I don't root for them now that I'm a journalist, Barry. I don't care who wins.
So you're telling me the A's were still in Kansas City when you were a kid starting to follow baseball?
That's correct. They moved in 68 to Oakland, and I started following baseball hardcore, like the nerd kid with the transistor radio, and scouring the box scores and memorizing lineups and all that in 1967.
There we go. Because I have a scorecard, or I used to have a scorecard from a Kansas City Athletics game. Mm-hmm. It was probably about 65 or 66.
Yeah.
And I don't really remember the game. I was too young to really
take it in.
But I went back through it. Oh, yeah. Don't know if I got any autographs to that one or not.
They were kind of like the farm team for the Yankees, right? Kansas. Yeah. Like every August, the owner of the Yankees would be like, oh, I like that guy. Let's take that guy. He's a pretty good player on that Kansas City team, right? Let's snag him.
So did your dad teach you to love baseball?
No, I come from a really non-sports-oriented family.
So how did that happen?
Well, oddly enough, like I was really, music was my first love, rock and roll in particular. And I was in a little garage band and I only cared about that. That was my love.
What did you play?
Did drums. Yeah. I was percussionist. So you want to hear Wipeout? anyway, get this. I had a paper out in San Rafael, Independent Journal, and they had this promotion that came out that said all the paper boys, if you get five or six people to start the paper next month, we're going to load all you paper boys up and in a bus, we're going to take you to a Giants game on a Friday night. And you will relate to this story for one reason in particular. So anyway, I didn't even want to go, but my best buddy loved sports. My mom couldn't get me to sign up for Little League. That's how, you know, no, I'm on my drum lessons.
I'm a drummer.
That's all I want to do. And he's like, no, Mark, it'll be fun. You know, he talked Danny, I'll never forget, still in contact with the guy. We go to the game. I'm not kidding you. It was like that scene in The Godfather where Michael gets hit by a thunderbolt when he sees that beautiful, like we walked through, it was a Friday night, Candlestick Park, open those big doors that opened up to the field and the wafting, like at that time, cigar smoke, beer, hot dogs. And I remember the bright green grass in contrast to the St. Louis Cardinals red, those beautiful red helmets. Yeah. And they're playing the Cardinals, those great Lou Brock, Bob Gibson, Orlando Cepeda. And it was like a life, serious, life-changing moment. And here's the kicker to the story. I'm sitting there watching the game for about 20 or 30 minutes, and I elbow my buddy Dan, and I go, Dan, who is that guy? And he goes, that's Willie Mays, you idiot. You know, because I couldn't, like, I didn't know anything about him. You know, I'd heard the name, and he caught my eye, and I was fixated, and I became a real just diehard fan, but in particular Willie Mays. And for the next time I'm on one of your iPod, I'll tell you the story of when I actually got to meet Willie. But that's, and I became that nerd kid with the transistor radio. Like literally my life changed like that. And it was sports that took up my whole world.
Isn't that something? I remember having that moment when you walk up the tunnel mm-hmm. into the stadium, and if you've never been in a major league stadium mm-hmm. as a child, I mean, and there was no color television in our house. I'd never seen anything like
that. I'd seen in glancing moments a black and white game on the barbershop or something.
And it was probably the downtown stadium in Kansas City, which I think was called Metropolitan Stadium, the old one.
Yep.
Which had the number one groundskeeper in baseball.
And I can, this day, Barry, remember the grass, how they did that fancy cut in the outfield, the squares or diagonals or whatever.
And the echoing sound of batting practice in an almost empty stadium. Yeah. Like, that is magic, isn't it?
Yeah, that sound of the ball hitting the leather, the bat. And yeah, it's something magical about being a kid. And just think, I was 12 years old before I went to my first game, and it was life-changing, life-altering, and you know, it's pretty magical. I hope kids get to experience that somehow, some way these days.
Yeah,
it's a different ball game.
It's happening. Maybe they have a controller in their hands though, in front of a screen.
Yeah,
these
right.
Are happening.
Or they're texting while they're out of the corner of their eye watching the game.
Times are a little different. Yeah. No more knothole gangs.
No, right? But so I owe my whole career to my paper out with the Independent Journal, Barry. Heaven knows when I would have seen my first game otherwise.
It's another example of the importance of local media.
Well, yeah. Right? And I tell parents all the time at different, you know, social functions I go to, is you never know what's going to spark your kids, expose them to as much, not just sports, but music, everything, because you never know when something's really going to take hold. Like my parents were like, what? This base? What?
Yeah.
You know, you like baseball?
Yeah.
You know?
That's so true, and I completely agree with that. There's a story I heard about an arts program, an outreach into mm-hmm. schools program, and this opera singer was describing his experience. He's like the artist in the classroom for the day, and it's an inner city school, and these kids don't have money to go to see
sure.
you know, the opera or right. the theater or whatever, and he talks a while and the kids are kind of bored, and then he says, so I'm going to sing a little bit for you from what I sing in the show I'm currently in.
Oh, cool.
He's an opera singer, so he just opens up and hits it, right? And there's this one boy whose eyes just get wider and wider. And when he's done, he says, how did you do that?
Yeah.
You know, something he had never heard before that just lit a fire in that kid.
Yeah.
And what you said is so true. If kids don't get exposure to different aspects of life, they just kind of go down a narrow path all the time. They never can become yeah. what they are meant to be.
Because, you know, if the parents... even if it's something the parents aren't even remotely interested
exactly.
in, still do it. Yeah. You know, it's great.
Well, we've run out of time, and just like that, that was very quick, but we'll do another episode soon, I hope.
Yeah, anytime you want, Barry.
Thanks for being on. Broadcasting legend Mark Ibanez. How many years? 43?
Yeah, but who's counting? 43 with Channel 2 and 1 year with KXTV CBS in Sacramento.
That's right.
Where I started.
That's right. And now Napa gets a lot more of your time, which is a good thing.
Absolutely. My wife brought me out here, and I'm very happy she did. Never leave.
Good job. Good job.
She's from here.
Mark, thanks again. And listen for Mark Ibanez Fridays on the Wine Country Live morning show, actual radio, not a podcast. And we usually talk about 20 minutes, about 8:30 or so, about whatever's going on in sports that week. So I'll talk to you then.
Cool. Can't wait.
That's the Barry Pod, recorded on the 7th of September, 2023.
You're listening to the Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
99.3 TheVine.com.